From Cheyenne to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly double dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but we're here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, a former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Welcome to Let's Talk Wyoming. I hope you're doing well. It's a beautiful week here in Wyoming, enjoying another gorgeous May week. I hope you are as well. I know a whole slew of graduations are taking place. Congratulations to all those wonderful graduates out there, and especially congratulations to all those hardworking parents who've been sweating and figuring out new math and Common Core math and everything else to get their children where they're at today. Congratulations to you, parents. You did it. Kids are past the finish line. Well done. So to all those out there celebrating graduations, well done. I want to talk today about some recent controversy we've seen in Wyoming in the political sphere. And it's coming from, you probably could guess this, the Freedom Caucus members. I bring this up not because I really enjoy talking about these folks. I certainly do not. But I personally think that they offer us in their own behavior a constant contrast between that behavior and what real leadership should look like. Because leadership really isn't measured by how loudly you can shout, how much you can perform. It's measured by what you build and whether it lasts. And this DC Freedom Caucus that we've seen come into Wyoming just seems intent on, I think, building some kind of legacy. But I would argue that from what we have seen and what they are attempting to build so far, it's not a legacy that most voters want. And it's certainly, I don't think, going to last. Ronald Reagan really understood that leadership is about building something strong. In one of the most politically divisive eras in American history, he managed to assemble a really durable conservative coalition. And it was grounded in three guiding principles: economic freedom, moral clarity, and a strong national defense. And I want to talk about this today a little bit before I get into the recent stuff here in Wyoming, because I think it's really important to understand what Reagan built and why it has lasted so long. Reaganism was not about any kind of punitive structure that forced, you know, total conformity, or that, you know, was patterned around scheduled performative outrage. It was really about persuasion. It was about partnership. I mean, it was about a long-term strategy of success. If you remember, one of the most memorable commercials in the, you know, in the Reagan era was this great commercial about "It's Morning in America," and with these wonderful shots of like the huge flag over the Brooklyn Bridge and combines in a wheat field and boats in San Francisco Bay. And it was this beautiful, positive, you know, persuasive, hopeful message of "It's Morning in America." And that strategy, I think, has lasted for decades. We've been living, unfortunately, on those fumes, though, in the last couple of years, because this new nationalistic populist movement inside the GOP is really trying to strangle the life out of Reaganism, but it's still around. I mean, I'm a leading example, and I am not winning. I'm never going to have the Reaganism strangled out of me. I stand, as so many others, as folks who are deeply influenced by Ronald Reagan, who believe in that mission and who want to hold that line inside the GOP, and we're going to continue to fight to do so. I think today in Wyoming, though, we are drifting dangerously far from that model. And instead of seeing leaders who rise above sort of the noise of the day, we're watching too many of them rush to perform for the algorithm, you know, perform for the camera, perform for the headline, perform on the Zoom video. Instead of the kind of Reagan coalition building, we're really witnessing, I think, the collapse of collaboration as a positive force, really. And nowhere is that more evident than, I think, in the recent behavior of some members of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus and their allies. So let's break this down. The Reagan model really is something to know and to understand, because he built a movement. He built this on this idea that you build coalitions and these three legs of the stool. So the first leg was, of course, economic freedom. Reagan knew that prosperity was built when government got out of the way, but he also knew that you can't attract jobs, you can't attract talent or opportunity if your government is consumed by infighting, right? Economic growth really requires consistency. It requires cooperation, usually across the aisle, and leaders focused on results, not just, you know, rhetoric. And so most of Reagan's economic freedom was built, well, it was mostly built on the solid foundation of the Austrian school, you know, with giants like von Mises and Hayek, all those great economic thinkers. But it was also built on the understanding of stability. And that's what America had to offer, and still in many ways has to offer, is this sense of stability. In a state like Wyoming, most assuredly has that to offer, you know, your chamber working hand in hand with your city council or your county commissioners working together in tandem in a way to continue to get government out of the way, foster consistency, foster collaboration and cooperation. That was one leg of the stool. Then we had moral clarity. Reagan had convictions. He had strong convictions, and he did not hide from tough issues. He believed strongly in the religious right of the country, and he really leaned into that. But he also didn't use those values as weapons against fellow Republicans. He persuaded. He reasoned. He brought people along instead of excommunicating them. That's really moral leadership in a nutshell. He embraced a pro-family, pro-life platform. He brought in a real moral clarity that the backbone of our middle class is really, that the backbone of our country is our middle class, and that it's profoundly important to the strength of our country overall, which is absolutely true. The idea of the power of family values, the importance of parental rights, the necessary stability of the family unit in a society, because the family is the building block of any society. If you read history, every great society is built on the strength of the family. There's a reason that is so profoundly important that men marry women and that they build a family together and have children. There's that anchoring, that tethering, sort of that, you know, slowing of the instinct to always be on the chase that the male race has, that this family unit together is super, so powerful, because we have the sayings like the, you know, the powerful mom, the mama bear kind of thing, papa bear kind of thing. This unit is the most stabilizing unit in humankind. That is the family. And Reagan embraced that. He understood how important and how powerful that was and is. And that was another leg of his three-legged stool. And then, of course, his third leg was a strong national defense. Reagan was a cold warrior. Of course, he was. He also understood diplomacy. He understood alliance building. He understood the power of our alliances and our allies. Internally, he didn't treat other Republicans or even other Americans as enemies. And he really, I think, understood the difference between political disagreements and true threats to the nation. Because right now, I think we have to remind ourselves, we live in a time when every political disagreement is sort of rocketed up to some kind of massive threat to the nation. And Reagan simply did not entertain that kind of sort of political entertainment or political tactic, as it were. And so that's the third leg, strong national defense. Really, Reagan governed with this North Star. He built this coalition inside the GOP and inside this political movement. It was a coalition that lasted. Out of it, he created policies that lasted. And they did. I mean, we saw that kind of peace and prosperity through the 80s and 90s and into the early 2000s. And Reagan built that, let's be clear. So what are we seeing instead here in Wyoming? Because right now we're not seeing Reagan's style of coalition building at all. We're watching performative politics masquerading as, you know, supposedly principled leadership. And nowhere is that clearer than the ongoing Freedom Caucus-induced civil war inside the Wyoming Republican ranks, inside particularly the legislature, among colleagues who should be collaborating together. I wanted to talk about a spat that recently was made public between two representatives over in Sweetwater County. This whole thing was initiated by a Freedom Caucus member, Representative Darren McCann, who wrote an op-ed piece regarding an issue inside his community. And instead of addressing the issue and talking about things that he could do to help families and communities, or even how he intended to use his caucus, you know, the Freedom Caucus's majority, for creating solutions, he used it as an opportunity, gratuitously, I would say, to attack one of his fellow Republicans, Representative Cody Wiley. The issue that sparked all of this comes from a family in Rock Springs that believed that their school district had deeply mishandled communications regarding their young child's gender identity. And I think I could probably go so far maybe to say that I think the family felt the school district, or at least the teachers within some specific teachers within the district, were trying to facilitate a change in that child's gender identity without informing or without any knowledge or consent from the minor child's parents. So the family filed a lawsuit. And just recently, a federal judge reviewed the case and ruled in favor of the school district. And really, you could argue, and most certainly, we certainly could argue the case and the judge's ruling. But regardless of all of that, we're talking about elected lawmakers here who should be operating at the highest professional level for the betterment of their communities and how they should handle this. And so what happened, or what should have happened, is that this ruling should have prompted, I think, a more thoughtful conversation amongst lawmakers about what needs to change, how to improve the communications between schools and parents, how to continue to protect and buttress parental rights and ensure that they are protected, where do we go? Is there more we can do? But that's not what happened. Instead, Representative McCann launched a rather public and rather ugly attack on Representative Wiley via this op-ed piece that did little more than really, I think, play the Freedom Caucus's favorite game, which is the blame game, right? That's their favorite thing. It's not but finding solutions. It's not finding, policy solutions. It's really the blame game. He blamed Wiley for voting down a bill that McCann claimed would have protected parental rights. And Wiley fired back with his own sort of piece defending his vote, and I think in a way casting doubt on the constitutionality or at least the effectiveness of the bill that McCann was pointing out. Listen, I'm not going to get into the weeds about who said and what the bill did and what didn't do and blah, blah, blah. What I am going to say is this. First and foremost, McCann's passion for parental rights is not the problem here. I think especially given what we're seeing in our neighbors to the south who just passed a bill to make it easier and easier to sever a parent's right to their own child, that Wyoming should be doing everything to affirm and protect parental rights. So the issue of protecting those rights that McCann is talking about isn't the problem in this. And really, nor was Cody Wiley trying to defend himself, because I think he had to respond to such a blatant attack on him. I think that this passion for parental rights isn't the problem. It's McCann's method and the Freedom Caucus's method, which is the problem. This blame game is nonsense. Publicly flogging a colleague over a disagreement, especially after the courts have really already weighed in, it just doesn't advance conservative goals. It stalls them, because Reagan's goal really was coalition building. Whether coalition building is needed, coalition building needs to happen. And it needs to happen here in Wyoming. And again, publicly flogging your colleague is not going to help the situation at all. It's really this kind of reality TV of politics that we're all living through right now. It's happening more and more in Wyoming. Instead of meaningful legislative dialogue, we get media-driven feuds. Instead of real debates, we get drama like this. So what could have been, I think, a thoughtful debate about what I think is a really important issue in figuring out the right way to continue to support parental rights has kind of become a political sideshow. And the discussion and the argument and the debate and the thoughtful debate over parental rights isn't happening. As a matter of fact, most of the talk that has come out of all of this isn't actually about the issue. And that's the problem, right? That's why this kind of gotcha politics is not Reagan-esque, because it never leads to actual change. And let me be clear, I'm not saying that coalition building will somehow miraculously end disagreement, because it doesn't, okay? Let me be clear. Even people in coalitions disagree, and they don't always stand together, right? There's always things that they're not going to stand together. A great conservative thinker, Richard Weaver, has in his most excellent book, which I can only highly recommend to you, Ideas Have Consequences. In that book, he talks about the power of language and about truth. And he has this quote I'm going to read to you from a chapter in his book, Ideas Have Consequences. Quote, if truth exists and is attained by man, it is not to be expected that there will be unison among those who have different degrees of it. This is one of the painful conditions of existence which the bourgeoisie like to shut from their sight. Unquote. Weaver, who was a great conservative thinker, is absolutely right. There's always going to be disagreement among people, even in coalitions. The difference is the intent and, the effort that's put forward. People of good intentions coming forward and building coalitions. They are striving to find, if possible, common ground and a way forward. The Freedom Caucus and McCann are never trying to do that. Representative McCann was gratuitously laying blame to simply take a shot at his fellow Republican. And this isn't a one-off incident. This has happened. It is really becoming the playbook for the Freedom Caucus's brand in Wyoming. So let me just talk about something that I think is really important. I said earlier that I feel like in many instances, Reagan understood building a legacy was so important, how leadership is involved in that building, why coalition building is important to building a lasting legacy that will continue on. The Freedom Caucus isn't doing any of that here. And I suspect it's because, this is my personal thoughts, but I suspect it's because they rely too much on their DC consultants and their masters. Remember, folks, Wyoming is the first state in the union where the Freedom Caucus has a majority in one of the state level chambers. They have it in the House of Representatives. Wyoming's members rely on these DC folks who created this organization in the first place and who decided to go out into the states and really try to shove this down and say, you're going to be a member of this outside caucus, because the Freedom Caucus is not a caucus in Wyoming that's really tied to communities in Wyoming or to voters in Wyoming. It's tied to this national organization. It gets its funding, its staffing funding. It gets, you know, so much of it, you know, the logo, it's tied to it. So the Freedom Caucus, I think, wants to build this legacy both nationally and individual states, but I'm going to be blunt. It hasn't delivered conservative governance and leadership at all. It's really building a brand built, you know, I think defined by grievance, by grandstanding, by gotcha politics, right? I think that's what defines it as a brand. And I think we see it day after day in things like this op-ed piece from Representative McCann and more. There's more pieces, you know, they've seen in the last month or so, there's been systematic opinion pieces going up. I think we see it in way that I think we see it in the way that they comport themselves, you know, in their town halls, their teletown halls, their videos. We see it in the way that they go after people, the nastiness you see from them on social media. I mean, nasty, fiery social media posts during the legislative session. If you watched, there was a lot of very canned floor speeches, people reading from their phones, scrolling through a pre-written up, you know, message. It was obviously intent to be sure that somebody said what they were told to have said. Their focus is really not on policy. It's on this kind of provocative politics. They label dissenters as traitors. I mean, they really do like spectacles. You know, I started Let's Talk Wyoming at the beginning of the year talking about a press conference they did in the Capitol before the session. And it really was a spectacle. I mean, it was very low on substance. You know, they had that, if you remember, five and dime plan. That is, where did that go, right? It kind of fell into the waste heap of political trivia or political garbage. But it was a spectacle. And I think at the heart of it, I've said this many, many times, the Freedom Caucus really confuses bullying with bravery. I think there's a lot of bullies in their leadership. I think they would like you to think that they're being incredibly brave, but really they're just bullies. It's a lot of nastiness. It's not Reagan conservatism. I think it's conservative cosplaying, to be honest with you. I think they're playing as though they're conservatives, but in their own moral fortitude, in their own ethical lines, they prove again and again and again that they are not. I had someone ask me a while back, you know, why are you not standing with the Freedom Caucus? You're conservative. I'll be really clear. Because they're not conservative. That's why. If I were in the legislature right now, I would not join the Freedom Caucus. I'll tell you why. Because at the very heart of the behavior is a personal decision by each and every one of these lawmakers who have signed on to the Freedom Caucus, who have either anonymously or publicly said they're a member, who were in on, you know, the out-of-state money that was going to be spent on their behalf, slamming their opponents, who made all these decisions. At the very heart of that is a personal decision to accept that kind of behavior under your own name and to do what you are told, to be okay with doing things that I think are nasty. And I personally am not okay with that. I would never do that. I mean, this is something that every one of those folks need to realize. At the end of the day, you or myself, Amy Edmonds, my personal reputation, your personal reputation is all that you have. And for me, I'm not willing to sully that. I would not be willing to do those things. I would not have been willing to take that. I was the first Republican to win in a Democrat district here in Laramie County, and I fought hard. I had no outside assistance. I didn't sign up to some national consultant. I did it myself, my husband and I, and I worked hard. And I can look myself in the mirror for every campaign that I ran. That's why I wouldn't do it. So no, I wouldn't join. I wouldn't fit in. I mean, I am a Reagan conservative. You know, Reagan famously said, "The person who agrees with you 80% of the time is a friend and an ally, not a 20% traitor." The Freedom Caucus really operates on the absolute opposite assumption of that. If you fall short of 100% agreement, you're an enemy. You know, you're an enemy. Forget that 80%. You know, forget it. Don't care. We're going to point out the 20%. We're going to send out nasty mailers. We're going to go after you. We're going to label you a Democrat. We're going to tell you that you should be in the Democrat Party, right? Because we don't agree with you. And this is really the problem. There is just such a scarcity in that kind of pursuit, in that kind of thinking. You know, I mean, it's like a dry riverbed, right? It's like in Wyoming, these cracked, you know, aching for rain. It's just a lack of abundance for our future. It's a mean kind of vengeful focus that really lacks the optimism and hopefulness that our state really needs right now. It's that optimism and hopefulness that Reagan really brought morning in America. I would love to see someone run a campaign in Wyoming that just catches on fire, that says it's morning in Wyoming. It's morning in Wyoming. We're on the cusp of something amazing and great. This is how Reagan persuaded. This is how Reagan got people who were truly on the other side of the aisle, who truly stood against, in many instances, him, soften. This is how he got them to soften, to see some value in what he was building, and more importantly, and closer into his own coalition. It's how he built the coalition. It was that optimism and hopefulness that actually brought around more moderate-leaning folks to voting for his initiatives, to really becoming sort of ride-or-die Reaganites. It was optimism that worked, because you do not persuade people with this kind of vengefulness, this kind of meanness. You do not persuade people. And so what we have is this Freedom Caucus. So I think instead of working on real and lasting things like real and lasting property tax reform, going out, talking to communities, talking to county commissioners, asking questions, seeing what they can do to fix the problems together, instead of working on energy policy that's looking at the future, our children's, our grandchildren's future, even any kind of lasting policy reform, anything like that, that would build Wyoming up instead of tear her down. They don't do that. They use floor time. They use ink time. They use, you know, op-ed time to tear people down. And then they fundraise off of that performance. And they want to punish. You know, they want to infiltrate the Wyoming Republican Party and turn it into a punishing machine. This is not going to build lasting change in Wyoming. They're not building an optimistic, hopeful policy reform for the future. They are not persuading people. I don't even see them attempting to gain new voters, quite frankly. Instead, they're just punishing. And meanwhile, we've got so many legislators who are really stuck sort of in this blame game, you know, circle that they can't get out of, that the Freedom Caucus has built. Or they're desperately trying to defend themselves against these attacks, the election attacks that the Freedom Caucus's out-of-state hitmen are going to bring, because they're going to come again. We'll see it. We saw it last August. We will see it in August of 2026. We're going to see these out-of-state mailers coming in. We're going to see all of this out-of-state money being spent on behalf of Freedom Caucus candidates. And those folks who are getting hit by that are not being persuaded of anything, because they're fighting for their lives. They're fighting for their communities and hoping that they can survive. The Freedom Caucus is not building any kind of strong, lasting legacy. And Wyoming voters, quite frankly, deserve better. You know, they don't expect perfection. I think they're incredibly marvelous people and they're so forgiving and they don't expect perfection. But they should expect and do expect, I think, real leaders. And I would point them to Reagan. They want legislators who can solve problems, who can build coalitions. They want legislators who can do that, not the ones that just want to start fights, who just want to play the blame game. You know, they want that real property tax relief that doesn't bankrupt their towns and counties. They want functioning communities. Is that too much to ask for? I mean, this is not difficult, but it seems to be for some of these folks. I mean, when I first served, I understood when you were getting your feet underneath you, you needed to understand the state budget, and you understood the guiding principle that when you keep money in the hands of our citizens, it is far more powerful than money in the hands of our government agencies. That's 100% true. But at some point, you have to understand the budget and exactly how it works. It doesn't mean that we need to strip away functioning communities. You can have both, right? Government does have its place, albeit small, limited. There's a place for it. It's not unreasonable for people to expect that. It's what the job is supposed to be. Instead, we've got folks that are doing floor speeches, you know, to raise money, not even thinking about the policy or caring. They don't care that much about the minutia. They care about hitting the hit squad goons, right? They got the people that send you text messages from out of state telling you to go after or telling you who the good guys or the bad guys are. They've got these, you know, organizations that you see all over social media on Facebook with ads and on Instagram with ads, with clown, you know, pictures of rodeo clowns and such, and the photo of somebody you actually recognize and you go, what's this about? And, you know, these folks who say they're from Wyoming, but the rodeo clown is the bad guy, when all of us who've actually attended a rodeo know that the rodeo clown is the hero. All these people are out there doing that on behalf of the Freedom Caucus. Wyoming voters deserve better than that. And I think they expect more than that. And I don't think it's unreasonable for them to do that. It is not unreasonable to expect and want functioning communities, functioning schools. This is not unreasonable. This is something we should all strive for. Is there hyperbole around that? Sure. Are there people that are going to take it too far and say any little reform you do is going to destroy everything? Of course. That's rhetoric. It's political rhetoric. It's going to happen. It doesn't make them an enemy per se. You just have to out-persuade, out-show that they're just incorrect. They're playing politics. When conservatism becomes like a tribal cult where any kind of deviation is punished, we really lose what makes and what made that movement so powerful. It's what Reagan conservatism really became, and it's why it was so powerful. It's why I'm talking about it today. And when I talk about it, everyone knows what I'm talking about. You know, I said a few podcasts back that this push for groupthink, this tribalism, this populism, nationalism, it isn't conservatism, because it isn't. It's the old school romanticism of Rousseau. It's what sparked the revolution, the French Revolution, you know, and that's absolutely true. Reagan, as a real conservative, didn't need to agree with every Republican to work with them. That is another idea that is just mind-blowing, I think, to a lot of these Freedom Caucus folks and people inside the GOP. So let me just say it again. Reagan, as a true conservative, didn't need to agree with every Republican to work with them. Write that down. Mention that to a Freedom Caucus member you might know or somebody in your community that supports them. Ronald Reagan, as a true conservative, did not need to agree with everyone to work with them. He didn't turn differences into disqualifiers. He sat down with Democrats. He sat down with skeptical moderate Republicans. He negotiated and he compromised where it made sense, but he stood firm where it mattered. That's what we should be expecting from our leaders here in Wyoming. Today, I think our internal divisions are just so bitter that they're crowding out the very purpose of government. And I think all of us here should take note of that. We should be noticing. And I think if we are noticing it, we're going to see it in the ballot box in August of 2026. I really believe that. As Reagan put it himself, you know, there's no limit to the amount of good you can do if you don't care who gets the credit. I mean, that's antithetical to the Freedom Caucus, who care only about getting the credit. And that's exactly why they will not succeed. They will not succeed because of that. I believe it. I think if Reagan was alive and watching this mess, I don't think he would be clapping, because this really is a live, you know, in-person warning of what happens when a party like the Republican Party forgets what it stands for, and more importantly, forgets its own legacy. And I'm watching live in prime time a party that has forgotten its legacy, that's embracing things that are from the right or that are from the left, not the right, that are embracing policies that the nice Democrat Party of the United States embraced. And we're all watching it happen. But there's a better way. We can go back to who we are. We can remember our legacy. And our legacy is conservatism. It is Reagan conservatism. It's important. He built something that lasted. Reagan did that. And if we want to win in the future, if we want to go forward and do good policy, it's going to be returning to that legacy. Right now, the Freedom Caucus is offering Wyoming nothing but division, nothing but dysfunction. It's a real detour from the kind of future that Reagan, and I think that, you know, Reagan brought in, that Wyoming voters deserve to have in our state. So if you believe that Wyoming deserves leaders who can really solve problems, I think instead of picking fights, well, I'm going to do a shameless plug. Stay right here. Keep listening to Let's Talk Wyoming, because I'm going to be talking about it consistently. I want to fight for that real conservatism. I want to fight for conservatism that's built on courage, it's built on principles, and it's built on respect. I don't think it's over. I think we're going to fight for it. I think we're going to keep pushing for it. So I look forward to continuing the conversation. I do think we need to keep asking ourselves this question as a people here in Wyoming. Do we want to lead like Reagan? Do we want to build coalitions? Do we want to move policy forward? Or do we just want to initiate some kind of, you know, arguing matches on social media? Do we want to be divisive? Do we want to be ugly? Do we want to play to the lowest common denominator? I think people are growing weary of that. I hope they are. I am. I hope you are too. Hope you share this podcast with more friends, more people, right? Because we all should be solution oriented. Solutions, not press releases and stunts and that sort of thing. So let's think about it. Let's think about the fight for a real conservatism, a real coalition building amongst all of us, including the moderates in this state. A coalition built on courage and principle and respect. Yeah, I think we're going to keep talking about that. Okay, before I go, I wanted to talk really quickly about something that came up in some of the emails I got from you, a few of you. I was asked about a piece that Friedrich Hayek wrote called Why I'm Not a Conservative, and what I think about it, and do I agree with him? And so since I brought Hayek up earlier talking about Reagan's three legs of the stool, I'll address it here. So, and I'll try to be as quick as I can be. Number one, no, I don't agree with Hayek's piece. And let me characterize, let's just talk about it real quick for those of you who may not have read it. So again, Friedrich Hayek was a Nobel Prize winning economist. He was a Cold War thinker. He's the author of The Road to Serfdom and The Constitution of Liberty. I highly recommend both of those to you. And I think in 1960, he penned this essay called Why I'm Not a Conservative. And in the piece, he made some key assertions. And so I'm just going to kind of go through those so you can get a sense of what I'm talking about if you've not read Why I'm Not a Conservative. He essentially says in the piece that he's very critical of conservatism for being too reactive, right? He says that it lacks a clear direction, that all it wants to do is essentially apply the brakes. brakes, but doesn't want to steer toward a destination, that conservatives are just instinctually against change without offering any alternative. He goes back to classical liberalism, which I have talked about numerous times on my podcasts, classical liberalism, and says, you know, obviously rooted in that individual liberty, free markets, spontaneous order. He talks a lot about spontaneous order. I'll get back to that. But he says that, you know, so classical liberalism is the right way, that unlike conservatism, which clings to tradition or kind of fears innovation, liberalism embraces change through the system of rules and through principles. He says that, you know, conservatives distrust spontaneous order. Hayek really criticizes the conservative fondness for authority and preference for order imposed above rather than emerging organically, and that's what he means by spontaneous order. He views this as intellectually incompatible with the liberal belief in market mechanisms and the, you know, decentralized decision making. And he does talk a lot about, you know, what he believes conservatives' desire for more order. He opposes a conservative desire to use government to enforce moral or religious beliefs. He believes that genuine liberty requires tolerating beliefs and behaviors as long as they don't infringe on others. He believes that conservatives lack intellectual tools, thinks that conservatism is backward-looking and suspicious of theory. He talks a little bit about nationalism and imperialism. He really defends democracy not as an end in itself, but as a mechanism for peaceful change. And he makes this case that he's sort of an old Whig in terms of being, you know, the Whig Party, and old Whig meaning old, the earlier variations of the Whig Party. The Whig Party went a little Whiggish toward its end. And he argues for sort of a revival of the old Whig tradition rooted in constitutionalism, individual rights, you know, kind of a suspicion of power. He, you know, is frustrated by the name. Sort of in the 1960s is sort of a time when liberalism, the idea of American liberalism, when we think of a liberal, you think of Bernie Sanders, right? Or AOC. And he, in the 1960s, obviously before these two people's time, but he was very frustrated that the word liberal was being, had been so badly co-opted in the United States, in some sense, even in Europe as well, because we think of European liberals now as also being like an American liberal almost. But you have to remember classical liberalism, something different, yeah, is all about freedom, individual rights, the constitutional order, that sort of thing. So he laments about that. Hayek, you know, wasn't a conservative. He wasn't a progressive either. And he was an old Whig, and that's what he says, someone who believed that liberty grows best, you know, in this garden of limits. He writes, there's a great piece that he wrote about the garden anyway, but that's very good. And he really believed that liberty grew best in a garden with limits, rules, with reason. I think that Hayek's piece does a couple of things really badly. I think, first of all, he sets up a straw man, right? He portrays conservatives as nostalgic only, as authoritarian, as anti-intellectual. And I think he really either ignores or deliberately misunderstands sort of the richness and the variety within the conservative tradition. You know, you've got conservatives like Edmund Burke, Russell Kirk, Richard Weaver, Michael Oakeshott. They all offer really deep principled arguments about ordered liberty, something I've talked about here, natural law, the value of tradition, not merely resistance to change or even authority worship. You know, Russell Kirk argued against Hayek's piece and said that Hayek mistook conservatism for really a political program when it was more a way of being rooted in prudence and humility towards, I think, sort of the complexity of human nature and how it plays out in reality in real time, right? And a lot of folks really critiqued his elevation of this spontaneous order, which I think I agree with completely. If you read Hayek's piece, he elevates this idea of the market and spontaneous order above everything else. And it is too abstract and it is blind to the moral and cultural preconditions for liberty, right? Because markets don't build civilizations, families, churches, customs and institutions do. Without a shared moral order, liberty really is licentiousness. And the problem with the Hayekians in their embrace of market, and spontaneous order is that they completely ignore and it lacks the moral ballast that is needed to sustain a free society in practice, right? Once it jumps off the page of your book or your paper, into the real world in practice, you miss all of that. And it's too cold. It's too abstract. That's the problem with higher spontaneous order. I think it's also very, very naive to human nature. That conservatives really do argue that Hayek's, you know, sort of classical liberalism in his most abstract way, it underestimates the need for moral guardrails and really tradition-bound institutions to constrain those human passions. And I think that is so important. I mean, Burke himself would probably have rebutted and said, listen, liberty divorced from tradition and virtue is chaos. And I've said this again and again on my podcast. You have to have tradition. You have to have virtue. You have to have these things. Burke has a quote where he says, liberty must be limited in order to be possessed. And I think Hayek's emphasis on these individual choices and spontaneous order really risks unraveling the social fabric. And it does. I mean, this is the problem when you don't tie them together and you don't have those guardrails and you don't have that tradition. And you just leave it to really what ultimately becomes, excuse me, chaos. I also think that in many ways, Hayek was very, I think, tolerant to cultural permissiveness and, you know, moral relativism, which is a huge problem for him. It's a problem in a lot of the things that he did. You know, I think he ignores how moral neutrality opens the door for corrosive ideologies like progressism, hedonism, going on and on. And I think that moral neutrality, as much as you try to play the game that you want moral neutrality, the critics are absolutely right. And I would agree completely that turning a blind eye to it really does ignore the corrosive realities of that. Obviously, for most of us who are Christians, Hayek, I think, was way too harsh on religion. He's dismissive. He's skeptical of religion's role in preserving liberty. And, you know, I think that's a real problem. Society cannot remain free if it is spiritually empty. As a matter of fact, you know, there's the great argument, the U.S. in the first waves after, in our fight during the Cold War and some of the first early waves, In God We Trust was added to quite a few of our documents because it used to be before that, E Pluribus Unum, out of the many one. And that was done as a direct rebuttal to this godlessness of the Soviet Union and an understanding of how the moral foundations of liberty require more than just, you know, economic freedom. You know, they require shared truths, and shared truths come in large part through religion. And so, and we did this, you know, our country did this in the 60s, I think it was in the late 50s or 60s. And I always hate myself when I bring these things up off the cuff and haven't had a chance to go research them. But I bring this up talking about Hayek's, you know, harshness towards religion, and to say that his skepticism and fear really is problematic, because again, a society cannot be free if it's spiritually empty. The Soviet Union was absolutely spiritually empty. You did not and were not allowed to practice any religion of any kind. And that didn't work out so well, right? So I think there's a lot of good. I mean, I don't think I know. I mean, like, I highly, highly recommend to you Hayek's two books. They're marvelous. And if you haven't read The Road to Serfdom or The Constitution of Liberty, you should go read them. I think the piece, though, on why I'm not a conservative, yes, no, I do not agree with it. Yes, I have lots of issues with it. I think that, you know, putting principles over politics is very naive in some instances. And I think Hayek could do that because he was an academic and he was an economist. I think principles are essential, but I also think coalition building, which is what I just talked about, institutional loyalty, these pragmatic things are so important. So, you know, I would say that Hayek's piece really reduces the definition of conservatism. He creates these straw men. I would just completely disagree. I think Russell Kirk has a great quote I would use to sort of sum this up. He says the 20th century conservative is concerned, first of all, for the regeneration of the spirit and character, with the perennial problem of the inner order of the soul, the outer order of the commonwealth depending upon that inner order. I think that's the real problem with Hayek, is that it completely and utterly ignores the fact that human beings have to carry these things out, and that human beings make everything very messy, and that an ordered soul, an understanding of ordered liberty, is so important to creating a framework where everyone can be free. Anyway, so that's just those are my thoughts. Okay, guys, that answers that question. I really think Wyoming's at a crossroads, right? This is what I'm saying. I really, really do. I think that Wyoming conservatives can continue down the path the Freedom Caucus, I think, wants to put us on. on, unfortunately, or we can choose something different and we can get out of. I think the best thing we can do is to stand up against this path of divisiveness and performance and really have courage, point out the things that are wrong and the reasons why. Talk about ideas, not people. That's statesmanlike. I think Reagan's motto, which is not easy, but it worked. It was a movement that lasted and it got things done. It got lasting things done, lasting things, economic freedom, real freedom. And I think Wyoming needs that kind of resurgence of a movement that will last. And I guess the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we want to govern or do we just want to grandstand? Because one of those options builds the future, but the other one is going to burn it down. Right? Grandstanding is going to burn it down. So do we want to govern? Do we want to grandstand? And I think we want to govern. I think we need to govern conservatively. I think we need real conservatives governing. And I think we need to build the Reagan model here in Wyoming because it worked. So I think let's choose wisely. Let's keep talking about this. Okay. Thank you guys so much for listening. I really, really appreciate it. I so appreciate the feedback I keep getting. I really do. It's just very humbling. Thank you so much. And I love actually getting some of these questions like the one I just talked about. So thank you. You can find me on Facebook. Let's Talk Wyoming. Just put it in. Go find me. You can private message. Would love, love, love to hear from you. So thank you. We got a bunch of legislative interim committee meetings that are meeting. The Corporations Committee met. We've got a slew of new bills or talking about new bills. We've had a bunch of stuff going on in education. They're going to be meeting soon. Recalibration is this year. Minerals just met. I'm recording this on Thursday. They're meeting again today. There's more to talk about there. There's been a bunch of stuff coming up with a bunch of big new projects statewide, could potentially create a bunch of jobs, but then there are also possible potential downsides to those projects. And so we need to talk about that. There is a lot to tackle. How do we eat an elephant one bite at a time? So I'm going to tackle them one bite at a time. Thank you so much. Again, if you like the podcast, please go over to my Facebook page, Let's Talk Wyoming. Like it, share with your friends. Feel free to contact me anytime. All right, until I talk to you guys next week, have a wonderful Memorial weekend here in beautiful, beautiful Wyoming. Take care.